up on the screen, but that's not rooted in the ancient Aramaic or Greek or Hebrew or anything like that. It's just tell the dang truth. This is a really simple statement, right? Like, we teach that to children in elementary, in kindergarten. Like, I have little kids. They're 3 and 6. You've heard me talk about them. I don't think there's a preacher in the world that exists where you don't have to hear about stories about their kids and stuff like that. But I expect them to tell the truth, right? If they say something that isn't true, if they say something that's half true, if they've got a white lie, they kind of blur truth. I don't say to them, just tell the dang truth, because, well, sometimes maybe I speak a little bit like that, but like, oh, what's going on with this thing? Is it a little loose? Do you want me to hold a mic? I can hold a mic. Is it? I broke it. Just chuck me one of those. I tried to use the Britney Spears mic and it didn't work. I expect my kids to tell the truth. There's no, you know, there's not really any negotiating on that, right? It's not like, hey, you know what, if you guys could be kind of honest, whatever. And we get that. We teach that to kids. We expect that from people. And even as adults, we expect that from other people. We expect that from kids. We expect that from our peers, our friends, or family. The main person we usually don't always expect that from, especially as we get older, I think is ourselves. And we find lots of really like well-meaning, well-sounding reasons, I think, to kind of bend and adjust and kind of change things and change the story and talk around perspectives and things like that. In Jeremiah, in the Bible, it actually, the prophet describes our hearts as like deceitful beyond cure. So oftentimes, I think what happens is, you know, our heart gets like a desire. It's like, this is the way I want it to go. This is the way I want it to sound. And it kind of shoots a message to our brain. It's like, figure out a way to justify this for me. The brain kind of does some like moral gymnastics, sends it back to the heart. And then you're like, okay, I feel good about this. As we get older, we find ways to kind of skirt around this and be like, well, I don't know how this will land, or like the narrative, or how people will feel, or this. And it's so easy for us to step away from these five simple words. Just tell the dang truth. That's it. So if the sermon does get too long or you're too excited about the potluck, just tell the dang truth. That's all you need to remember. In the Sermon on the Mount where we're at, remember, we're leaning into the preacher on the Mount. We're not just trying to look for the words, the data, and stuff like that. But we're really saying, who is this preacher? Who's this God that's rolled up onto the side of this hill that we're listening to? How do we draw close to him? And the part that we're at, we're actually going through this like kind of section of it where Jesus is unpacking parts of the Old Testament law. It started out the week where Josh was talking about Jesus talking about him fulfilling the law and the prophets. And then he goes into these different parts of the Old Testament law. Now, if you've been in the North American church for a while, you've probably yourself thought or ran into people who thought, they're like, well, that's the Old Testament. We're kind of past that. I'm just more of a New Testament Christian and stuff like that. The Old Testament, simply put, the law is this brilliant representation of God's character. It's this revelation. It's this incredible picture, this representation of who God is. It's not just a list of rules, but it's him saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. And here Jesus pulls up onto the side of this mountain, this little hill, and he just starts talking through that and further giving us a picture of who he is so that we can lean in and draw near. And this is what Jesus says. Matthew 5, starting in verse 33, he says, again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. If we just stop there, that sounds great, right? Oh, you've heard it was said to people long ago, don't break your oaths, keep your vows, keep that before the Lord. That's a great teaching, right? And that is in the Old Testament. That's Old Testament law. It's like you make an oath, you make a vow, you make a commitment, follow through on it. That's a great teaching. But Jesus, in this sermon, is continually raising the bar, because if he's digging into the character of God is infinitely perfect and righteous and holy. It's without flaw. So there's not just this like, hey, you know, here's the elementary version of this. He's like, if you actually want to lean into my character and who I am, there are these infinite and these growing steps where you can continue to grow and lean into what that means. So, like he always does, says, you've heard this. This is a great teaching. He raises his bar. He says in verse 34, but I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. If we're honest, the Bible's kind of a weird book in a lot of ways. It says a lot of stuff that we're like, yeah, it's cool. It says a lot of stuff that we're like, what? What are you talking about? Like, most of us, we read this text and we can feel pretty good about ourselves because it's like, yeah, I haven't like sworn by heaven recently. You know, like I haven't like done a, oh, Jerusalem promise to anyone recently. It's like all 2024, I've been free of Jerusalem in any of my promises or any of my oath to anybody like that. I haven't sworn by my own head. I haven't done these types of things. I haven't even earthed a promise or anything like that. You know, it's like, what the heck is Jesus talking about? So I want to dig a little bit back actually into the Old Testament narrative that precedes this and share a little bit about the story of God and the formation of the people of God. And why I think we arrive at a teaching like this, where Jesus is on the side of this hill teaching like this. So when Jesus, kind of first foremost, he's talking about this idea of not swearing by earth or by heaven or by Jerusalem or by your head. In the beginning, God created this world. And we talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago when we got to dig into divorce. That was everyone's favorite week, right? And this picture of God creating this like beautiful wedding environment where he sets the stage and it's beautiful and he invites people into that. And it's this really honest, truthful, kind, compassionate, loving relationship. But as we know, really quickly, by chapter 3 of the Bible, as we read it, things go kind of sideways and people start making kind of a mess. But God continues to journey with his people, this community of faith. Today we call it church, but at points we've called it Israel, whatever you want to call it. But this community of people who are trying to follow God, and he continues to journey with them. And there's this idea in a community of faith, in the people of God, the children of God, followers of Jesus, there's this idea that they should carry God's character with them and they should live honestly and sincerely with one another. And we'd love to read the Old Testament and see that happen. But what we see page after page after page is that trust is broken and people are let down, lies are told, and it falls apart all the time. So what would happen in Old Testament times is, you know, I could go up to someone, say Checklon, he's right here. By the way, that first song this morning, Josh all shredding in Checklon, like, anyways, that was pretty sick. Anyways, I think we should encore that one afterwards. But anyways, I go up to Checklon, I'm like, hey, Checklon, I'm going to make a commitment to you. I promise him something. In Old Testament days, at first, hopefully that would mean something. But over time, when people start to see that people lie or they don't come through on commitments or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about divorce, right? You know, people say, till death do us part. I think people who hear that believe that less nowadays than they used to because we see it's like things are getting broken, right? Like it's not, people are lying to one another. People aren't following through on their commitments. So I go up to Checklon, I promise him something. He's like, maybe. So he doesn't really he's not quite sure if he can believe me. So then I might go to him and I might say, well, you know what, Checklon, here's the deal. I'm not just going to commit this to you, but I'm actually going to I'm going to commit this by Josh. So what I'm doing is I'm bringing Josh into this commitment, into this statement or this covenant or whatever it is, and saying, here's the deal. If I'm not going to come through, you can know that you can go to Josh and Josh can come beat me up. I maybe should have picked someone a little bit bigger and scarier. Foo. Okay. No offense, Josh. I'm not very strong, but maybe you're the person in the room I could take. But, Checklon's like, I'm not sure. So I go to Josh. I'm like, you know what? I'll bring Josh into this. But over time, that starts to deteriorate as well. Because what people see is like, Checklon's like, well, Ryan and Josh work together. Like, they hang out. They're friends. Like, Josh might just kind of have Ryan's back. So then that might not be enough. So if I really want him to believe me, I would go and say, actually, Checklon, not just by Josh or Foo or whoever, but by all of Pilgrim. So what I'm saying is if I don't come through on this, you can actually go to the whole community and they can come hold me accountable. They can deal with me. They can work it out with me. They can figure this out with me. And then it's like, well, maybe that's not enough. So I'm like, all of Vancouver. So I say all of Jerusalem, like the whole city can hold me accountable. They can hold a trial. They can put me to death if I don't come through on my commitment. I'm not actually saying that. Please don't hold me to that. But they can take whatever consequences on me if I don't come through. But that's not enough because people start breaking those commitments. We can't trust each other enough. We're not honest enough. So they say, okay, not just by Jerusalem, the whole earth. May the whole planet earth, well, they probably didn't believe it was a planet back then, but may the whole world fall on top of my head and crush me if I don't come through on this commitment. I'm so serious about this. But guess what? People still made claims like that, and they still didn't come through. So then people would say, by God in heaven, I swear, if I am not telling the truth, if I don't come through on my commitment, if you can't take what I'm saying to the bank, may God himself deal with me. But guess what? Still, people broke their commitments. So people would make these big claims and make these big promises. And here Jesus says, don't do that. Don't say, oh, by this person. Don't say, by this city. Don't say, by the world. Don't say, by my footstool. And I think there are a few reasons for that. And the next one, I think he unpacks really well here. He says, don't swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. 10 years ago when I read that passage, it didn't mean as much to me as it does now. Now I read that passage, I'm like, man, I wish I could make some of my white hairs black. When they first started showing up, you might not notice from there, but if you look closely, there it's like a whole sea of white in there. It's just hiding well behind some of them. But when they first started showing up, I'd pull one or two out. But now they're just like, and by the way, old wives' tale about pulling them out, two don't grow back, that's biologically impossible. But anyways, I used to pull some out. Now there's just no way I can keep up. I wish I could control that. There's so much in my life I wish I could control. As you get older, or you go through some certain experiences, you begin to realize there's so much in life that you absolutely cannot control. And even if you haven't had a personal experience, I think like 4 years ago, we all had a pretty collective experience, right? Of like, wow, everything's like really out of control. The whole world changes, all these rules, invisible virus. I'm talking about COVID in case anybody forgets that thing, but it's like all these things go on. It's like it's out of our control. So I think first and foremost, I think Jesus is saying, you make these big boasts when you don't even know what tomorrow brings. You don't even know if you'll have the breath in your lungs. You don't know what you can do. So much in our life is out of our control and changes. Now, I don't think that's an excuse to be like, well, I'm just never going to commit to anything because I don't know. But I think that's a really realistic thing for Jesus to say. Say, like in the book of James, you can read about this where James, he says, why are you making all these big promises and commitments for tomorrow? You don't know what tomorrow brings. So I think Jesus would say that. But beyond that, I think Jesus is getting at this idea. It's like, why do you have to promise by heaven? Why do you have to promise by the globe? Why do you have to promise by a whole community? It's because you guys aren't very honest with each other. You guys aren't trustworthy. You guys are breaking your commitments. You're breaking your promises. And all you need to say is simply yes or no. Man, shouldn't it be that way in the community of the people of God? If God is a God of truth, shouldn't it be that way that we say yes or no and we could believe that? This is why courts and laws exist, right? Lawyers, that's why they have jobs. It's because we don't agree and we can't trust each other. And we say things, we have these contracts that we have to sign into, and contracts get longer and longer and longer and then have to be fought in courts because it's like, we can't just be like, yep or no. We say something and then we want to go back on it and we want to change it and we want to change our commitment. And unfortunately, it's not that different in the church than it is in the world. It's not like you go to a church and people are like, oh, what's a lawyer? What's a courtroom? I've never heard of that. You know, we still do the same stuff. We're still fighting over the same stuff. We're still going back on our word. And Jesus says, all you need to say is simply yes or no. As Jesus is unpacking the Old Testament law here, for sure his early audience would be more familiar. Well, pretty much any church audience in the history of the church is more familiar with Scripture than in 2024. But especially his early Jewish audience would be very familiar with the teachings of the Old Testament. And not just the teachings, but they'd be very familiar with the story of the Old Testament. And I think there's something going on here throughout this whole like section of teaching of Jesus, but maybe particularly in this text, that would have kind of registered and would have kind of triggered a memory for his early audience. See, in the Old Testament, God is revealing his character through his law. And he does this in many times, but there are a few significant moments. And I think as Jesus's friends and followers and skeptics and in between are listening to him, this early Jewish audience, they probably would have been like, this is interesting. There's this guy up on this mountain teaching through aspects of the law. That reminds me of something. There's a story you can read about it in the middle of Exodus. If I'm honest, right before the book of Exodus gets kind of dry and boring, and they tell you the instructions about building the tabernacle. But where this other guy goes up on a mountain, his name's Moses, and he starts to have this conversation with God about the teachings of the law, and he comes down to teach people about the law, the representation of God's character. And if you grew up in the church, you know this is the Ten Commandments. I like to call it the Decalogue. It's kind of just kind of a cool fancy word. But also, it doesn't limit it to only being 10, but it's these 10 statements. And they go like this. This is how I like to sum them up. It's longer in the Bible. But basically, it says, don't have false gods. Don't have fake gods. Don't misuse God's name. Rest. Honor your parents. Don't kill. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't lie. And don't envy. These 10 teachings, and I have to imagine that as Jesus is up on the hillside teaching through some of the aspects of the Old Testament law, his Jewish audience would remember there's another guy who went up on the hillside, and I think Jesus is mirroring this. Now, as we look at this list of 10, and you've maybe heard this before, as we're looking at this passage where Jesus is saying, say simply yes or no, don't break your oaths, all that kind of thing, tell the dang truth, probably most of us would go to number 9 and be like, don't lie. That really connects and relates. And I think it does. But I think there's one that's actually comes to life so much in this teaching of Jesus here. It's number 3. Don't misuse God's name. That's Ryan's paraphrase. In your Bible, it probably says, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. You know, I grew up as a pastor's kid. Don't take the Lord your God's name in vain meant one thing. It meant that don't say, oh my God, or Jesus Christ as like a swear word. You're allowed to shout that in a church service as like if you're excited, but if you shout that when you hit like your thumb with a hammer or something like that, no, that's really bad. And growing up, that's what that meant for me. That's what that meant. And I don't think we should take God's name as an expletive. I'm not teaching that. But I think to boil that down to like OMG is like off the table for this commandment, I think is really misunderstanding what's going on. God tells people not to take his name in vain, not to misuse his name, really not to misrepresent his name. What's going on in the Old Testament is not only is God leading this community of faith to experience his presence and his character, but to be the reflection. Remember Genesis 1:27, right at the start, to be his image bearers, to reflect his image to the world around them. And the people of God who say, we're the children of God, we're the community of faith, they go out and they live and they're dishonest with one another and they misrepresent God's character to people all around them. Think about when Moses came down from this mountain. You guys probably know the story. People are like worshiping a golden calf. We think that's crazy. We can talk about that later. I think we worship all kinds of golden calves in 2024. However, they come down and they're doing this. What they've done is they've actually let Canaanite and Egyptian culture represent their belief system and impose it on them rather than them taking the character of God and representing that to them. The light of the gods of Baal and Ra have shone more brightly into them than they are shining God's light and character into the nations around them. And the whole story of the Old Testament is God saying, go and bear my light and be my witness and reflect my image to people around me. Because when you say you're the children of God, when you say you're a Christian, you're part of a church, when you say you're a follower of Jesus, however you like to term it, you're part of the community of faith and you go out and you live contrary to the character of Jesus, this is taking God's name in vain. This is misusing God's name. It's putting a label of God's name on something that doesn't represent you. You've ever been in a situation where you're with a friend and they're saying something to someone that you're like, that's really uncomfortable, and you're like, I really don't resonate with that, and you're like, you don't even want to be associated with the person or whatever. You're just like, oh my goodness, like you want to distance yourself from that. When we're dishonest, I mean, don't you think this is how God must feel? The amount of times throughout Scripture where God is termed as this being of truth is like it's over and over and over again. Growing up in the church, you probably heard that, learned that passage where Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." It's a really interesting list of three things. The way, for sure, he needs to be the way to God. Life, yeah, we need that. We need eternal life. But truth, what a weird one, because in the middle, we could put peace, we could put love, and all of us would be fine with that. The way, the life, and the love, oh yeah, that's great. The way, the peace, that would be great. But But for some reason, truth is so integral that in this list of three, it's like that. Even the opening of the book of John, John 1, Jesus is termed as this messenger who's come, this king, this God who's come with grace and with truth. Again, grace, we find that very vital. But he could say grace and love. He could say grace and peace, and we'd be fine with that edit. I don't think we often take this idea of truth and like deep-seated integrity seriously enough. In fact, what I think we've often done in the modern church is something like this. We're like, we hear that Jesus has come with truth and grace, and we really like the idea of grace, right? It's more comfortable. And so what we do is we kind of just try to be people of grace, and we kind of neglect truth. But in that, I think that we actually cheapen what grace actually is, because grace only matters when truth is around. If the truth of like what's not going well is around, then grace matters. And our grace is just really kind of cultural politeness and kindness. And we're called to be people of truth and grace, people who live incredible lives of integrity. Over my years in the church, one of the things I've often observed is that many things are like they are in the world. But one of the things I've noticed is that when people join whatever you call it at your church, here it's home churches, churches have small groups, community groups, life groups, all those things. When you go and join one of those, oftentimes people say they need to be there for several years before they feel comfortable to be able to open up and share.